Cavalcade of Kings. Henry VIII, Part One. Henry VIII was born in 1491. He was the second son of Henry VII and Elizabeth of York, and in him were united the rival houses of York and Lancaster. He loved display and amusement, but never neglected the government of his kingdom in his pursuit of pleasure. He made himself popular by his hearty manner and prowess in all forms of sport, and during the first years of his reign, held a firm place in the hearts of the people. It is the year 1509. The scene, Westminster Abbey. The coronation of the king is in progress. Seated in the coronation chair is Henry, a young, handsome youth of 18. The Archbishop of Canterbury stands before him, bearing reverently aloft the crown of Edward the Confessor. Presently, the voice of the prelate breaks the solemn silence.
O God, bless, we beseech thee, and sanctify this, thy servant Henry, our king. And as thou dost this day, set a crown of pure gold upon his head. So enrich his royal heart with thine abundant grace, and crown him with all princely virtues, through the King eternal. Amen.
Henry married Catherine, his brother's widow, and for years they lived happily together. Henry soon felt the need of a wise and prudent minister to help him. He found him in a young priest named Thomas Wolsey, who was the son of an Ipswich merchant. Later, Wolsey was made Lord Chancellor and Archbishop of York, and many years later, we find him with the king, now changed into a cruel, selfish man.
You say, good Wolsey, that the soldiers fought right bravely for me, and that 'twas they who won the Battle of the Spurs in France, and also defeated the Scots at Flodden Field. Well, why not? Did I not pay them in good coin of the realm for their services?
You did, sire. But whilst fighting for you these many years, they have forgotten how to work.
They'll soon learn again.
And in the meantime, they starve, unless they rob and murder for a livelihood.
I'll soon put an end to their lawlessness. A law shall be made whereby any man committing a robbery shall be hanged, eh?
Hanging is also the punishment meted out to murderers.
Ah, well, what of it?
It is but reasonable to suppose, sire, that the man shall not only rob, but murder his victim, so that his accuser's tongue shall be silenced and unable to give evidence against
him. Enough of these cursed arguments. Why persecute me so when my mind is already tortured beyond endurance? What with the intrigues of Spain and France, the audacity of Luther to rot his soul for the heretic that he is, and mine own uneasy conscience. Aye, verily, Wolsey, my marriage with Catherine, it lies close to my conscience.
No, my son, thy conscience has crept too near another lady. Perchance, 'twould be as well to forget her.
Good priest, what man could forget the ravishing delights of charming Anne Boleyn, eh?
Spare me thy ravings, I pray thee. And let us return to the question of thy marriage. It would seem that thy conscience has rested content in it for 17 long years. Henry, my son, what need is there for subterfuge between you and me?
There is no subterfuge, good priest.
Then tell me when the uneasiness first overtook thee.
When certain questions were asked me by the Bishop of Bayonne, then French ambassador, who had come to England to arrange a marriage between the Duke of Orleans and the daughter Mary. He bore a letter from the king, who doubted the legitimacy of Mary, being as she is the offspring of the marriage of myself and my brother's widow, Catherine.
What would you have me say to this, sire?
Catherine is 6 years older than I. She's plain, cold, quarrelsome.
And Anne Boleyn is young, beautiful, and ripe for love. I understand, sire.
Then you will help me, good priest, to free myself from my present illegal tie?
Henry, my son, thou art blacker than pitch.
And thou, good priest?
I am as red with sin as the scarlet robes I wear. Together we plot the ruin of a pure, good woman whose only crime is that she no longer finds favor in her husband's eyes. Poor Catherine, unhappy for thee was the day thou left thy father's kingdom to become the wife of the monster of England.
Huh? Art free with thy tongue, priest?
For once I spake a word of truth. Now have me thrown into the Tower, if thou dare.
Why? Ah, good priest,
I thought not. For if my head fell, who would thou have to perform thy foul villainies?
I lean on no man, priest.
'Tis pleasant news, sire. Now I shall be spared this foul task of breaking a noble lady's heart. Farewell.
No. Come back. Good friend. Look not so black. I've adjusted. Think no more of it. Come, good Wolsey. Thou seekest money. Much money with which to carry out the building of Ipswich in Oxford. Huh? I will give you all you need. And more, if thou wilt journey to Rome and place the unhappy condition of my marriage before the Pope.
Fate dangles in a tempting fashion before mine eyes, and the object of my appetite bids me nibble the luscious morsel. Money for the building of Ipswich and Oxford, wherein so many will receive enlightenment.
Well, you will go to Rome, good Wolsey.
Tomorrow will see me on my way, sire.
Wolsey's interview with the Pope resulted in Cardinal Campeggio being sent to England to try the validity of the King's marriage. And in 1529, the court was opened at Blackfriars. Henry and Catherine, Wolsey and Campeggio have taken their places. Suddenly, Catherine rises from her seat and flings herself at the King's feet.
Sire, give me justice. I beseech thee to give me justice and to bestow pity upon me. I am but a poor woman, a stranger born out of your kingdom. I have no friends here to advise me, nor to guide me. Alas, sire, in what way have I offended thee, that thou should cast me from thee like a worn-out garment?
Oh, Catherine,
Sire, for nearly 20 years I have been a true and humble wife. I have borne my children and lived a good, pure life, and mine honor is chaste and untarnished by the breath of scandal.
Ah, good Catherine, against thee there is no charge. Always hast thou been a devoted, loving wife. But the learned men have discovered that our marriage is not legal, you being the widow of my brother.
Sire, think thee that thy father and mine, both prudent men and possessing great wisdom, would have countenanced our alliance if 'twere not lawful. Oh, sire, I beseech thee to spare me till I receive advice from Spain. Nay, I implore thee in the name of God.
Noble lady, what better advisers dost need than these reverend fathers to plead thy cause?
His grace has spoken well. Therefore, madam, pray permit the case to proceed, and that without delay.
My lord Cardinal Campeggio's commands must be obeyed, wife. Huh?
As ye will, husband. But I will speak first to Wolsey.
Your pleasure, madam.
This, you are mine enemy, and I will not permit ye to judge me. For it is you who have planned this vile thing, and I utterly loathe you for your malicious wickedness.
Noble lady, you know not how bitterly you wrong me.
The queen is obstinate, stubborn, and disdainful. Is it not well? I like not her attitude.
All are arraigned against me, and I will not stay and be a party to this mockery of a trial.
Catherine, I command you to remain.
Husband, thou knowest not what ye do to me. I am like a poor wild animal caught in a trap, the victim of cruel taunts and base accusations, and yet I am innocent of all guilt. Henry, have pity on this poor heart of mine that loves ye well. Yea, even in this hour of thy perfidy, does it still adore thee?
Well, the queen now accuses his majesty of perfidy, eh? T'would the same, good father of Wolsey, that thou must have represented the noble lady to me by calling her gentle, meek, and saint-like. Her bearing is that of the vixen.
This is insufferable, and I will not listen to another word. Here in the court, instituted by the Pope, I make appeal to be tried by his holiness and to be judged by him alone.
Gentlemen, I forbid you, eh?
The queen must be given justice, sire.
You speak of justice. You, Cardinal Wolsey, speaks of justice. Verily, the word takes on a foulness as it passes thy vile lips, thou priest of Satan. But thy time will come, thy fate, the fate of all who attain by evil ways, is writ clear upon the horizon. And thy end shall be sanctioned by him whom ye serve so cunningly, so craftily, so wickedly. For uncertain indeed is the friendship and the love of Henry VIII of England.